Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith, and hope. Discover more interviews at openhousecommunity.com.au.
After months of denials, people were stunned when the New York Times newspaper forced the hand of the eldest Trump son, Donald Trump Jr., to release emails confirming that during the campaign, he did meet with a Russian lawyer who promised information detrimental to the campaign of Democratic rival Hillary Clinton. And this after President Trump fired the FBI director James Comey, who had been investigating such claims. We discussed the developments with John Barron. As a journalist and research associate at the US Studies Center, he's been covering US politics for more than 20 years.
Pleasure to be with you, Stephen.
So what do we know then about Donald Trump Jr. and his dealings? Firstly, who did he meet with during the election campaign?
Well, we're finding out more and more about one meeting in particular, which happened on the 9th of June last year. And this is the meeting with the shadowy Russian lawyer Natalia Vasilnitskaya and also Paul Manafort, the then campaign chairman. The son-in-law of the president, Jared Kushner, was also there, as well as Don Trump Jr.
And this was all in Trump Tower, wasn't it?
This was all in Trump Tower. And that's one of the reasons why, and we know that then-candidate Donald Trump was also in Trump Tower on that day. So this has a lot of people feverishly speculating, was Donald Trump Sr. in proximity? Did he duck his head into the meeting? Did he know the meeting was taking place beforehand or afterwards? So there are lots of things we don't know about this meeting. We're subsequently finding there was a translator who was also there, and Rob Goldstone, the sort of rather portly English concert promoter and music impresario, was also there. It's a bit of a clown car, a cast of characters seems a little bit ridiculous. And the Trump campaign and now administration are essentially saying that this was a nothing burger, was how they described it. There was nothing to this meeting. Yes, it was arranged on the promise of there being dirt on Hillary Clinton, but they didn't provide us with anything, so there's nothing to see here. That's their version of events.
Well, let's just analyze that all by itself. There's a massive contradictions in there. Firstly, why were they at the meeting? Well, because they were promised dirt on Hillary Clinton, and you'd have to say right at the outset, promised by who? Promised by Russians. Promised by which Russians? A Russian claiming to be involved in the Secret Service. So right at the outset, that smells, doesn't it?
Well, it certainly is potentially illegal, because while it's not illegal to meet with somebody who is promising dirt on your rival, a lot of political campaigns do that. It is illegal if that person is a foreign national or
exactly
representing a foreign government. And it was made very, very clear, it's quite overt in the chain of emails that was released last week, that this was a, quote, Russian government lawyer. Now, I guess one defense is to say that Don Trump Jr., he's not a campaign veteran, he didn't know any better, he probably didn't even know this piece of electoral law, didn't know, just got a bit carried away, et cetera, et cetera. But, of course, Paul Manafort, the campaign chairman, has been around campaign politics for 30 years. He certainly would know better. He also knows how Russia works. He's done a lot of work for Russian and Russian-influenced Ukrainian clients as well. So he knows the lay of the land there. They thought they would get away with this meeting. The big question, of course, is, Stephen, what happened in that meeting? What was really said? And also, was that the end of it, or was that just the first sounding out and there was more to it beyond that? That's what we're waiting to find out.
While we're waiting, I'm still back here on some of these other questions. Firstly, they denied having had anything to do with Russians, although now they say, with the Russian government, now they say, guess what, that lawyer who claimed she was from the Russian government, turns out she wasn't, she was just a Russian, and we haven't even really analysed whether she was or wasn't, but they are treating the electorate, surely, John Barron, as if they are fools who don't even remember Trump's own very curious double standards during the election campaign.
There was a sense for a lot of last year, Stephen, that the Trump campaign didn't expect to win the presidential election.
Yes.
The Trump campaign was, in the first instance, a branding exercise for Donald Trump to increase his profile and to further his business interests and also to make money along the way. Don't forget, they found a way to actually turn a profit from running a presidential campaign. The campaign renting Donald Trump's private aircraft off him as a campaign jet, renting office space in Trump Tower, renting staff off the Trump Corporation. So all the money that was going into the Trump campaign was then going into the Trump Corporation as profit. And so this is a rather handy plan B. If plan A, winning the election, didn't work out, then they would continue on and make some money and potentially make some more money in Russia, because we do know for the last 10 years a lot of Donald Trump's finance has come from Russia, because he's been bankrupt so many times that Wall Street doesn't really want to know about him anymore. And so cozying up to the Russians may have made good business sense. It just, in retrospect, didn't make very good political sense.
Right, now let's move to that, indeed. Let's move forward then to the further investigation that has to take place. What if we do find that there was some smoke coming out of that gun?
The question now is, are we going to find that there was a conspiracy to engage in further criminal acts? So the act of meeting with a foreign agent to try and get some, quote, thing of value, which could be money or it could be information, that in itself is a crime, but not likely to see you sent to jail, but it's still not a good thing. Usually, of course, though, those sort of minor crimes become a major problem when you lie about them. So if you have failed to disclose that you held that meeting when filling out security clearance forms, so Jared Kushner, for instance, denied ever meeting with any Russians, and now we know that he had a number of meetings with a number of different Russians. So that could be a problem for him. And of course, if there was any discussion about the hacking of the DNC or John Podesta, the campaign chairman for the Hillary Clinton campaign, if there was any kind of complicity between members of the Trump campaign and the Russians who were doing that hacking, as well as coordinating when it might be most damaging to release that information during the campaign, then that would also be, I guess, the smoke coming out of the gun.
Well, John, where does that lead us? Unless it takes us straight to the president himself, and yet there's no direct link yet established or even alleged, is it more than just a slap on the wrist for his campaign team?
Well, it really depends on the famous question that was asked of Richard Nixon in 1973 by Senator Howard Baker. What did the president know and when did the president know it?
Yes.
So if Donald Trump knew about these meetings, he knew that Jared had meetings with Russians, he knew that Don Jr. had meetings with Russians, he knew that Michael Flynn had meetings, the NOWSEC National Security Advisor, had meetings with Russians, and he consistently denied these meetings took place, and then he fired the FBI Director James Comey. In part, he said, because he wanted him to shut down the investigation into possible links between his campaign and Russia. So that's where a possible charge of obstruction of justice against Donald Trump becomes a possibility. But it could also be, Stephen, that they famously say it's the cover-up that gets you. In the case of Donald Trump, he is yet to sit down with Robert Mueller, the special counsel who's now been appointed to investigate the whole affair, and it's there that he's at his greatest danger of potentially perjuring himself, or an obstruction of justice might be revealed. And perjury and obstruction of justice are two of the, I guess, recognised high crimes and misdemeanours that can lead to the political impeachment of a president, because you can't charge a sitting president with a crime. You have to get them out of office by impeaching them to get them into a criminal trial situation. Now, all of that is, of course, largely hypothetical. None of these things may ever happen. Donald Trump may, in fact, just be this completely sort of bumbling neophyte at politics who didn't know all these laws that he was breaking, but they'll never be able to prove some grand conspiracy, or indeed, he could have already done the thing that is going to get him booted out of office. We're just going to have to wait and see on that front.
Well, yes, it gets more fascinating by the week. John Barron is our guest on Open House. John is, of course, with the ABC's Planet America and The Drum, amongst other things. John's also a research associate at the US Studies Centre. John, is the big damage here, whether or not it leads to impeachment, which would be astounding, but is the big damage here already done, in that people in America must surely be now questioning their trust of the office of president itself?
Well, some would argue, Stephen, that Americans really never regained their trust in the presidency from the impeachment of Richard Nixon, or at least the resignation to avoid a full impeachment in 1974. And certainly ever since then, journalists have been out to become the Woodward and Bernstein of their generation, to uncover the thing that forces another president from office. We saw, you know, in the case of Jimmy Carter, they were already applying the gate suffix. They were referred to Billy Gate and Rabbit Gate and all sorts of things.
Yes.
In the case of Ronald Reagan, it was Iran-Contra and so on, where there was significant wrongdoing from parts of the Reagan administration. Of course, we all remember the 1990s and Whitewater and the Rose Law Firm and ultimately Lewinsky Gate that got Bill Clinton impeached by the House. So, you know, all of these things can sort of, you know, be, I guess, considered to have added to the erosion of the esteem that Americans hold presidents in. You can even trace it back further than Nixon to even the sort of the Pentagon Papers that were leaked in the early 70s, pre-Watergate, which showed the level of deception that Kennedy, Johnson and Nixon had all engaged in, misleading the American public about their involvement in Vietnam.
So, no, I take your point on that. What's interesting about this one, for particularly listeners to this program, the Christian community, is that Christians threw their hat in the ring with Donald Trump in a way that seemed at the outset to many of us to be surprising, given the way he had, given the flaws in his character that found themselves out during the election campaign. And I've been at events where prominent Christians in the United States, John, have actually excused his behavior, saying, well, at least we've got a guy who gave us what we wanted in the Supreme Court. And it's almost as if some people are post-justifying what I saw as what I believed was a curious decision to go with him, rather than someone like, say, Cruz, who was an outstanding campaigner.
Yeah, it's a fascinating choice that Christian conservatives made last year. And we know that 81% of evangelicals voted for Donald Trump, a figure that surprised people. That's in the general election, rather. Yeah. And he did get more evangelical supporters than the likes of Ted Cruz, John Kasich, even openly religious figures like Rick Santorum and Mike Huckabee didn't attract the support that he did. So, yeah, it was quite a trick. And you're right, a lot of that comes down to the Supreme Court, because it wasn't just that one Supreme Court seat, that of Antonin Scalia, who died in February last year, who Senate Republicans blocked the confirmation of a more progressive figure by Barack Obama in Justice Garland. So Donald Trump very wisely went out there and said, look, I don't know what you think of me, but here's my list of 20 potential Supreme Court appointees. And all of them were very conservative. All of them were the kinds of people that, given the opportunity, would overturn Roe versus Wade, the landmark ruling on abortion. Mm. So he managed to really assuage a lot of their fears about his personal morality by saying, well, his appointments will be consistent with the beliefs of a lot of Christian conservatives. And so They cheerfully voted for him over Hillary Clinton, who is very much pro-choice on the issue of abortion. And they knew that Donald Trump had previously expressed his support for a woman's right to choose, but had in the last 15 years or so changed his mind since the birth of his youngest son, Barron, now 12 years of age. He said that he changed his mind, seeing the ultrasound of his unborn baby son, changed his mind on the issue of abortion. And a lot of people took that on face value and said, well, you know, we feel as though he's a convert on this issue. And, of course, it wasn't just about that Neil Gorsuch place, that confirmation of Neil Gorsuch. It was the balance of the Supreme Court that would have become a progressive Supreme Court had Hillary Clinton won. She would have made not just that one appointment to fill conservative Justice Scalia's position, but potentially another two or three in her first four-year term, and maybe a two-year term. So it would have seen a progressive court for a generation or maybe more. So that is one thing that, by electing a Republican who has appointed conservative justices and will continue to do so, they've prevented the Supreme Court of the United States becoming a lot more progressive. So for a lot of people who voted for Donald Trump last year, that's mission accomplished. If he does nothing else, even if he doesn't even see out his four-year term. That is still a more successful outcome than had Hillary Clinton won the election.
Indeed. Well, fascinating, and we will keep a close watch, and we'll enjoy watching Planet America. I gather Planet America is being extended this year. Is that correct?
Yes, we're just keeping on going and going. It could well be that we'll last as long as President Trump does. So,
well, I hope you last longer than that. Very good, John. Thanks so much for joining us on Open House tonight.
Real pleasure, Stephen. Thank you.